Hi, Steve Pomerantz here, host of On the Money with today's On the Money Extra, where we feature market updates and insights as well as guest interviews with noted financial experts to help you stay informed and learn the facts to make the right decisions about money. So let's get started. As of last week, the S&P 500 sat unchanged for the year, while the Euro Index was up over 6%. This is a complete reversal of last year's trends and one that has been expected since the beginning of the year by a lot of people. Yet most investors will ultimately not make the portfolio adjustments necessary to earn these types of returns. So let's discuss that. And with me to discuss it is David Larrabee. He is Director of Member and Corporate Products at CFA Institute and an expert in portfolio management and equity investments. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
So with U.S. stocks increasingly looking overvalued, portfolio managers are looking abroad to European and Japanese stocks. And yet, as I said before, most investors won't enjoy these returns. Why is that?
Well, Steve, let me take a step back and maybe just provide some background for context. As you said, you know, the U.S. stock market has been trailing, I guess, European stocks this year, but they've been in a bull market now for over 6 years. And since bottoming in early 2009, the S&P 500 index, which is a common benchmark for U.S. stocks, has tripled in value. So that's an extraordinary move in just a 6 years' time. And not surprisingly, since 2008, the U.S. stock markets also outperformed other major stock markets around the world. So U.S. stocks have done well, not only in absolute terms, but in relative terms as well. In fact, only twice in history have U.S. stocks had a better six-year stretch, and that was between 1981 and 1987, and then between 1994 and 2000.
Yeah.
And as you know, in both cases, the end came without much warning, and the average investor got clobbered.
Yeah, that's so true. There is also this very important manifestation of human nature where people tend to invest looking in the rearview mirror, as you can say. In other words, they're looking at what has been the best performing investment, and they keep investing in it because they expect it to continue on forever, and really nothing ever does, right?
That's for sure. Nothing goes up in a straight line.
Yeah.
You know, and that really highlights the risk we wanted to talk about today, and that's what economists call this home country bias. And home country bias refers to investors' natural tendency to be, you know, most attracted to investments in their home markets. So in the U.S., investors have on average about 80% of their equity portfolios invested in U.S. stocks.
Mm-hmm.
But U.S. stocks only account for about 50% of the global market capitalization for stocks. So that means U.S. investors are making a pretty significant bet on U.S. stocks versus the rest of the world. Now, as we've seen, that's worked out great in recent years,
yeah.
But there's going to be a point in time when that reverses. In fact, just you consider the last 6 months, U.S. stocks are up about 4% or so. Stocks in Germany are up close to 25% over that period of time,
yeah.
And Chinese stocks are up about 50%.
Well, I think you make the most interesting point that I really want everybody listening to pay attention to, that most portfolios at the most will have about 20% in overseas stocks. It's kind of an allocation, kind of a de minimis allocation. And yet the U.S. market only represents 50% of the world market. Now, the U.S. market should, I think, have some bias to it because it is the largest, most liquid market in the world. And it is, you know, the strongest, I think, country in the world economically and so on. So I'm not saying it should be a 50-50 allocation. But you make a very strong point. And I think the reason that we have this home country bias is that we want to invest safely, we want to feel good, and we're used to investing in things that we can touch and feel and understand and know. I mean, we know what companies are U.S.-based companies, and we trust them to some degree. But these companies from overseas, I mean, who the heck are they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you're touching on another bias that's out there with investors, and that's familiarity bias.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the reasons behind, or one of the causes of this home country bias. You know, people simply like to invest in things they're familiar with and companies that they know well. And there's some wisdom in that. You know, Peter Lynch, the Fidelity fund manager who wrote that bestseller, One Up on Wall Street, he was an advocate of investing in what you know. And sure enough, if you look at the stocks that have been leading the market higher over the last year, names like Apple and Disney, Home Depot and Nike, these stocks are up anywhere from 30% to 70% over the past year. But the point is that familiarity can also get you in trouble. If you invest with too narrow a focus, you're going to end up holding a portfolio of stocks that's not very well diversified, and that's less than optimal.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned those names. These are all really brand names. Everybody knows them. And it reminds me of the period of time in the 60s where there were a group of stocks just like that called the Nifty 50. You remember that?
Yeah, I sure do.
So let's see if we can remember some of the stocks in the Nifty 50. Xerox was one of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Avon Products was one of them. So really that's coming to
Polaroid.
Mind. Polaroid was one of them, right? So
right.
Obviously these were the stocks you had to own. And it's kind of the same today. You know, the stocks you have to own were the Googles and the Facebooks and the Apples. And once they become popular and then they start to garner very high prices because they're so popular, you know, you become subject to the law of diminishing returns. So watch out for that too, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there have been several academic studies on home country bias, and I just might mention a couple because the results are kind of interesting. And one of the things they point to behind this home country bias are people's expectations. Academic studies have shown that invariably, people around the world expect stock market returns in their home country to be higher than they would find elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, we know that all countries can't produce above average returns. There have to be some laggards.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one reason behind it. And then there's another one is that globalization effect. A lot of investors think that simply by investing in large multinational companies like an Apple or a Nike, they're getting all the international diversification they need. But this is really only partially true. And studies show that the performance of big multinational firms is really more closely tied to their home market. So investing in these multinationals really isn't enough to get you that international diversification that you need.
Well, everybody knew last year that Europe was not the place to be. I mean, I'm putting that in quotes because of all the apparent problems that they have and we've all known about. And then when interest rates came down there, we started to see a fall in the price of the euro, a commensurate rise in the price of the dollar. Then the euro ministers decided, okay, this was a time for them to put in quantitative easing, which had been so successful in driving stock markets higher in the United States and now in Japan, which is selling at 15-year highs.
Mm-hmm.
And so this combination of a low euro, which spurs manufacturing, and quantitative easing is the case now for European stocks to start to do well. Do you buy into that?
I do. You know, Europe is a few years behind the U.S. in terms of the central bank activity, but just like the Federal Reserve did here in the U.S., they're trying to stimulate economic activity by keeping interest rates super low. So Europe is more or less borrowing from the U.S.'s playbook.
Yeah.
And so we're seeing the same effect there, where the low interest rates are really pushing people, investors, into riskier asset classes. So from fixed income instruments to equity instruments.
Yeah.
So that's what's putting people into stocks. And we're seeing the stock market respond over in Europe.
And in the U.S., you have the price of these large companies, which have done so well for so many years, they're getting really very toppy. They're becoming, you know, overvalued by many ways of measuring that. And we were talking off air about some comments that Mark Cuban made, who's, you know, a tech billionaire, basically saying that there's a bubble forming in tech stocks, but it's not in the public tech stocks, but it's more in the privately held tech stocks. And he's saying that prices are so elevated that at some point when it comes time to sell, there's really going to be no buyers because there's no liquidity. And also there's a lot of mutual funds which invest domestically here in the U.S. that have a lot of these private funds too. Last words on that. We've got about a minute left. What do you think about that?
Well, I think Mark Cuban makes a good point. And, you know, one of the points he was making, I think, was that what differentiates today from the tech bubble back in 2000 is that today you've got many of the big mutual fund families, Fidelity, T. Rowe Price, that are investing fairly actively in the private market space. And that's the concern, that now it's not just high net worth, you know, billionaires and venture capitalists that are being exposed to these risks. It's the average mutual fund investor, too, by virtue of his holding on to that mutual fund. So I think it's a real risk out there. I'm not sure, you know, how big a risk it is, but I think it's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think it's a warning bell. And also the point, though, that is, first of all, these mutual funds don't represent our banking system. So if they get into trouble, this is not a too big to fail situation. But maybe this is also an argument against holding some of these mutual funds and just getting back into ETFs. You know, if these mutual funds have these hidden investments in private equity, and Mark Cuban's words come to pass, perhaps there will be a reckoning one day. And as a mutual fund holder, perhaps you want to be aware of that beforehand. My guest is David Larrabee, Director of Member and Corporate Products at the CFA Institute, and of course, an expert in portfolio management and equity investments. David, thanks for joining us. I'm definitely going to have you back.
Thanks, Steve. It was a pleasure.
You're listening to On the Money with certified financial planner Steve Pomerantz. If you'd like information about guests, topics, or anything you hear on this program, call 866-MONEY01 or visit the show's website at onthemoneyradio.org.